Folks, it's the big holiday weekend, and it's time for a bit of a refresher on good practices and safety in the woods. Joining us to talk about this subject is Kurt Steele, who is the district ranger for the Tofty District of the Superior National Forest. Kurt Steele, welcome to the Roadhouse.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
You know, this Superior National Forest is a huge area with a whole lot of different users. What exactly is the role of the Forest Service in safety and rescue?
Sure. So safety-wise, you know, obviously if we have campgrounds, designated campgrounds or designated campsites out in the on the boundary waters, we often look and identify hazard trees and try to take those out and, you know, try to do a preliminary aspect. But obviously with the recent storms, you never can be too careful, and we don't guarantee your safety. You know, the safety is really on the user themselves, but we try to identify what we can and mitigate it beforehand. In
sure.
In terms of rescue, that's actually the responsibility of Cook County here, and we assist when we can, and obviously especially in the wilderness we often assist with our wilderness rangers or other firefighters, but in general the rescue aspect is really the responsibility of the sheriff. So
and the sheriff has a complement of volunteers that who work with him, there used to be a search and rescue squad.
Yep, there still is.
Okay.
Yep, and it's basically a volunteer-based program. Obviously, they have some folks that are paid staff with Jim Weenan and some of the other folks.
Right.
But yep.
Right. And so you guys all communicate together when you have, let's say, a rescue going on?
Yeah. We're in close communication whenever, especially when it's on the forest. Obviously, when it's in the boundary waters, there's more communication that needs to occur. But if it's outside the boundary waters, really, the county kind of takes the lead role on that. And inside the boundary waters, the county also takes the lead role, but we assist when we can.
And within the boundary waters, canoe area wilderness, how often do you have to deal with a rescue situation?
Sure. So it definitely happens. I wouldn't say frequently, but definitely happens on occasion. I think this year we've had, obviously with the big storm where we had the fatality, there was two other rescues that day, and then there was actually one on the west side of the forest as well. So it seems like on average, maybe once every other weekend across the forest. But again, it's hit and miss, and it depends on what's going on.
But a fatality, that's pretty unusual.
Pretty rare, yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you want to, I'm not sure, most of our listeners are familiar with that, but not everybody is. So tell us what happened.
Sure. So there was a group, two fathers and two sons on Father's Day weekend, and they were out on Duncan Lake, and that severe storm came through and unfortunately had real high winds associated with that kind of isolated winds on Duncan Lake there, and a large white pine actually came down and ended up hitting the individual and killed the father, and then the son ended up fracturing, I think, his pelvis and femurs. But as far as I know, the son's doing okay. But unfortunate event there.
And how did the rescue for that transpire?
So that was late at night. So it was about, I think about 10:30 when that came about. So I actually don't know exactly how it came about. Obviously, it came into the county.
Different. In the Gunflint district.
Yep, it was in the Gunflint district. Obviously, I got the call at 11:30 myself and knew about the situation as well as the rescue that was happening on Cove Lake there. But basically, the county got informed, issued the search and rescue, and were able to get in there and rescue the boy. And
when you're in the boundary waters on a rescue, I mean, we all know the limitations on motorized use and mechanized use and so on. What happens when there's a rescue?
Sure. So usually what happens, depending on the severity of the rescue, the sheriff actually may request motorized equipment depending on the situation. And that gets approved through our forest supervisor. And basically when that request comes in, oftentimes if life and safety is involved, we're probably going to grant that request. But it's not guaranteed, so it does have to be requested.
What, looking at the situation, I'm not sure how familiar you are with that particular site, but when people are going out into the wilderness like this and being aware of these potential for big storms and high winds, what are a few things that people should remember when setting up a campsite?
Sure, yeah. You know, I think, again, looking up, I mean, that's key. You know, obviously, it looks well manicured down below, but that's not what's going to kill you. It's actually going to be from above. So making sure you do your due diligence and looking up at the trees and seeing if there's any leaning trees next to your camp or any weakened trees or widowmakers, that limbs that are just hanging there above your camp, and really just taking your own diligence and making sure the camp is safe.
And what about precautions for possible lightning strikes?
Yeah, that's a challenge, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, your best bet, obviously, if you're in the open, is to not be next to a tall tree. Obviously, in the Boundary Waters, there's a lot of tall trees out there. So they have what's called a lightning position, where you kind of get low to the ground. You're basically trying to stay low and keep your feet together where you don't have much surface area contact with the
connected
ground.
With the ground.
Yeah. But it's challenging.
And and when you're setting up a campsite, I mean, I'm always remembering not to set up on a big root system or a root system of a tall tree.
Right, yeah. And actually, they said that on the west zone, in that same storm where the fatality happened, there was six individuals that got struck by lightning, and they said that the tree that it struck was about 100 or 150 feet away, and that's what they're thinking. It went through the root system to get them. Now, that's not scientific or not proven, but that's what they're
saying. Yeah, and it's pretty hard to avoid if you're 100 and some feet away.
That is. I mean, it's almost a game of hope.
Yeah. How about it's enough with storms and lightning. They're pretty powerful and pretty dangerous, but how about just getting lost in general? What's the frequency of rescues involving people who are lost?
You know, I think it happens more during the winter, it seems like, in terms of folks being out and about. But during the summer months with the canoe, you know, that's most of the time in the Boundary Waters is usually where our rescues happen. But we don't get a ton of folks getting lost, but we do get them on occasion. And it's a little difficult when someone gets lost and they're not on a trail. If it's on a trail, it's easier because you can just find them. But if they're actually truly lost in the woods, it's a little more difficult.
And you do some educating with people that are going into the Boundary Waters. I'm wondering if people in the Boundary Waters are less likely to get lost because they've kind of prepared for route finding.
Let's hope so. Yeah. Let's hope that they're bringing a map and that they're familiar with the area. If not, and if they're not familiar with the area, are well observed or can look at a map and actually operate it fairly easily.
Yeah. And of course, now that people have GPSs and spots and cell phones, I mean, do cell phones work many places in the Boundary Waters?
It's hit and miss. I wouldn't count on it, but obviously the GPS with the satellite, those often work, and the spot devices. In fact, last year we had a Boy Scout camp that hit a spot device emergency that went on, that we had to go in there and end up being a false alarm, but we took precautions just in case because you don't know. So, so yeah, you know, that's the technology is there. Obviously, it's just what it is.
Yeah, I mean, do you when people go into the Boundary Waters, let me tell you this. What I want to talk a little bit more about camping ethics and treating the woods with respect and the water with respect. You have camping in both the Sevier National Forest and the Boundary Waters canoe area. What's the difference in terms of your dealing with people on camping ethics in the two different places?
Sure. So the biggest difference is really the mechanized equipment. So in the Boundary Waters, technically, it's still the Sevier National Forest, but in the Boundary Waters, you can't use mechanized equipment. But we still try to practice the leave no trace, you know, pack it in, pack it out, those type of situations. But it's really just about, you know, making sure that what you do is sustainable over time. And with the amount of users that we have across the forest, it's really just to be really just about making sure you're good land stewards.
We are speaking with Kurt Steele. He is the district ranger for the Tofty District of the Superior National Forest. And we're talking about what do you expect, or what's some good advice for people heading into the woods or onto the waters this weekend. And we were just talking about camping in the Superior National Forest versus the Boundary Waters and the different rules that apply. for the Boundary Waters versus the just the forest campgrounds. What's the modern day environmental ethical level of most campers nowadays? Is it improving over the years, or does it get worse? Or
boy, I don't know if I can speak to that. I can tell you, I think there's more education out there. I mean, there's more information out there for folks to realize what good ethical camping is. So I'd like to think it's getting better, but you know, I'm not one to say the trends on that. But I would like to hope that it is.
I know you have some enforcement people out in the woods. Yep. And on the waters. What do they encounter? Are they encountering generally people who adhere to the rules of the Boundary Waters, or?
I think the biggest thing they often find is folks burning trash, whether it's plastic bottles or whatever it is. You know, obviously you can't bring glass or cans in in the Boundary Waters, but people still burn their trash. So I think that's probably the number one thing folks do. And obviously we try to say, you know, if you pack it in, you're going to pack it out, you know, so take what you're going to need. And, but, you know, other than that,
any violations of the bottles and cans?
Yeah, you know, you're always going to find those folks. but in general, you know, especially going in the Boundary Waters, you have to watch that video before you go in. So a lot of folks know that rule, and I don't think you get a lot of violators of that, but you do find it for sure. And our wilderness rangers do a good job of education when they're out there.
And in fact, the potential is there for a citation to be issued if you violate those rules, right?
Absolutely, yep.
What about bears and bear safety? What little nugget can you throw out for folks who are concerned about protecting themselves from the black bear, our friends?
Yeah, sure. So there's obviously a number of techniques that we have, whether it's hanging stuff in trees or having a bear-proof or bear-resistant container that you keep your food in. But it's really just about cleanliness. If you keep your camp clean, ideally, and you pack in and pack out what you have, so the bear's not finding things left over from campers, which then means they'll come back, because obviously an easy meal for a bear, they're going to try to get that easy meal again. Mm-hmm. So it's really about not allowing the bears to get educated that that's an easy meal. So if we do a good job of packing in, packing out, and do a good job of securing your food overnight, I think that's the number one thing with that. And we don't
securing your food overnight doesn't necessarily mean hanging it.
Correct.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to ask you about crazy stuff I was reading about in some of the areas, BLM areas, like out in Moab, where they've got slacklining and base jumping, and we don't have any of that kind of stuff up here, do you? Do we have any weird sports or dangerous pursuits?
I don't know. I mean, you always have people that are out there kind of trying to start new things, but not that I know of. You know, we don't promote any of that stuff for sure on the Superior.
No, I mean, it's pretty crazy. In fact, in the Boundary Waters now, it's not permissible to sail or to put up a sail. Am I right?
I actually, truthfully, cannot speak to that. I actually don't know if that's true or not. I would have to get back to you on that.
Okay. All right, I can tell you that Dave disagrees, but yeah, sailing, I've done it many times myself, where you put up a tarp or something and get a benefit of the wind, but I believe it's not allowed, but I'll be interested in what you find out. Let me know.
I will get back to you on that one, yeah, sorry. That has not been a question I've ever been asked.
All right, let's see. What would you say about you know, the forest fire dangers and how to protect against that, and a little bit of the background of what have been problems in the past with forest fires starting.
Sure. So obviously we are in a fire adapted ecosystem, meaning fire is a part of the ecosystem here, and we're well aware of that. But you know, in general, we don't like to see the human starts. You know, lightning starts, kind of the natural aspect. Sure, we'll deal with those a little bit differently, but the human starts, it's really about putting your campfires out and making sure that they're out. And and you should be able to literally put your hand almost in it, if you know, to make sure it's cold. So if it's not there, you know, bring some more water and make sure it's out before you leave.
The danger must be fairly low right now, is it not?
There's been a lot of rain. So the campfire danger is probably low, but you never know. I mean, you get a couple, we have a good weekend coming up with a couple dry days and things dry out. Those fine fuels, the grasses and stuff can still carry some fire. So I always try to make sure that you are fire safe and try to make sure that fire's out no matter if it's wet or not.
And there's plenty of dead and down stuff out there that can be start a fire even when it's greened.
Absolutely.
When everything else is green.
Absolutely.
How about transporting firewood? You hear about not wanting to bring in firewood from outside. What's the rule on that?
Yeah, ideally we would like to have it localized. You know, the Emerald Ash Borer. Thank you. I was just like, oh man. That's a big component, and firewood's kind of the biggest aspect of how that got transferred around. And actually, it's just right on our doorstep. Last I heard, it was in the Duluth area, so it's coming up. But yeah, ideally for pest management, you want to have your local firewood right there. You know, within 20-30 miles is the ideal spot.
What do you recommend for people who want root finding equipment? Do you guys recommend as particular devices, or like GPSs, or just a compass and a map?
I think it depends on your user. I think, you know, for myself, I can get out there with the compass and map and be 100% fine. But you know, you have to be competent and make sure you know how to use the equipment, whether it's compass or map or GPS. A GPS doesn't do any good if you don't know how to use it. So mm-hmm. I think it's more important to make sure that you know how to use the equipment prior to going out there and not to try to learn when you're out there.
And it's also a good idea to have both a compass and a map and not just a map.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's not
easy to get
idea.
Twisted around out there in the woods, particularly in the woods. On the water, it's a little easier, but in the woods, definitely difficult. How about permits for doing different things in the forest? I mean, we've talked mostly about camping and going into the boundary waters. We know there's a permit required for going into the boundary waters. Yep. Are there other permits that are required for uses in the Forest Service?
So depending on your campground, there might be some areas that require a fee. Usually those are concessionaire campgrounds that they're well signed. It says fee required, and you can mm-hmm. you have to have a fee there. And we have a lot of campgrounds on the Tofty District and on Gunflint that are free for use as well. So it'll be well posted if they have a fee associated with it in terms of camping aspect. And then you can also get firewood through a permit. You can just stop in at one of the offices and get a firewood permit.
What about ATV riding? And do you guys have any rules or regulations on ATV riding?
We do have. So there's a travel management guide that we have that you can pick up maps at the local offices, and actually says which routes are legally open for ATV routes. And that's the best way to mm-hmm. do that. But we don't have any permit system per se. Obviously DNR and others have their own system.
But there are certain roads that are where it is allowed and others that it's where it is not.
Correct. And the best way to do that is utilize one of the maps.
Is it the rule that if it's not marked for as allowed, that it's not allowed?
So if it's marked as not allowed, then yeah, it would definitely be not allowed. But just because it's not marked doesn't mean that it is allowed. That's what
I mean. No, that's what I mean. Does it have to be marked for it to be allowed?
No.
Okay.
No, it does not have to be marked to be allowed.
It's whatever is on your basic maps that people can pick up.
Yeah, the travel management maps is specifically what you need to pick up, and that has the routes that are approved.
All right. Well, it's been an interesting conversation, Kurt. Appreciate talking to you. This is Kurt Steele, the district manager for the Tofty District of the Spear National Forest. And Kurt, I wonder if there's a website or something that you want to call people's attention to if they want to kind of study what the Spear National Forest has to offer and what the safety regulations are.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the best thing, obviously, use Google or Bing or whatever your search engine is and just type in Spear National Forest, and it'll come up as a fs.fed type website, and you can go there, and there's all sorts of good information there that you can find
on the Spear National. And there's a page for each district. It looks like, too.
So there's a page for each district, but in general, it actually has kind of the recreation aspect. So there might be a different link to each recreation site, depending on where it's at.
Well, any last words for folks who are heading out into the woods?
Enjoy the week and what beautiful weather we have. So looking forward to the weekend coming up, and make sure you be safe out there. And yeah, just...
All right. Good advice, Kurt Steele. Thank you very much.